to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Miles.
And welcome back to our character by character Stranger Things we rewatch, where we follow our 11 main characters throughout the series.
The secret sauce of Stranger Things, the cast and the characters.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube at StrangerStill22. Subscribe, share, review us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Our eighth character, Jonathan.
Our favorite character. And by favorite, I'm being totally sarcastic.
Did you notice I didn't have like this huge preamble?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't.
I couldn't like, what's the good big brother, the decent boyfriend, you know, hardworking son, everyone's favorite.
Average, yeah. Most average guy.
Everyone's favorite questionable freelance photographer. It's Jonathan Byers. In all seriousness, Jonathan's a huge part of season one.
Yeah, absolutely he is.
And he's truly one of the main characters in season one. He's the older brother of the little boy who has gone missing.
Yep.
And we meet him the morning after Will's disappearance. He and Joyce both realize together that Will is not there, and they were both working, and he kind of goes on his own search for Will. He's going to his dad's house. He goes to the woods to take pictures of a crime scene. Right. He kind of stumbles a little bit further onto a party where he takes some pictures of Nancy and her bra.
and then is
discovered while developing those photos that have Nancy in her bra. And Steve and the cool kids and Nancy confront him. Steve breaks his camera. So this is really part one. He's the older brother of the little missing boy. Right. Part two, he's taking some questionable photos. And should this action of Jonathan, should this have been like irredeemable? Because he's like totally back into hero mode now. But should this have been sort of a deal breaker?
No, you know, okay. I think it's important to note here that Jonathan has been, like, at the time he's taking these photos, he's been actively searching for his missing brother when he comes across Steve's pool party. So yeah. It's not like he was purposefully spying, right?
Yeah. And he even goes to the party because he thinks the screams are of danger.
Right, exactly. So it's not like he was, like, looking to be a perv. You know, I read a few different opinions and articles online, and I came across this Reddit thread that, like, I don't know. It really made sense to me because I didn't really see Jonathan as this super creepy perv in this moment. It is creepy and pervy, but like that's not how it was coming across. So like, okay, look at it this way. Jonathan is living out the nightmare of losing his little brother, and then he sees Steve's carefree pool party, and it's such a contrast from what he's experiencing. Oh, wow. So like, you know, he's already taking photographs, so like naturally, like he just feels compelled to photograph this party. It doesn't start with Nancy, right? So he's probably feeling like this sense of longing, being able to be like them and not go through this traumatic experience. But of course, the party progresses and Nancy goes upstairs with Steve. But I think at this point, Jonathan sees what he actually later confesses to Nancy. It's not someone in the throes of passion that he's taking a picture of, but somebody who's alone, lost, vulnerable. And I think that that's something that Jonathan greatly identifies with. So I think that's what he was photographing.
Yeah.
It just happens to also be her in her bra.
Yeah. And I mean, he does then develop it. And then also as he brings it out and they break his camera, he still has it.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. I agree with you. It's not like pervy. Another aspect of this that I really gathered on rewatch was that, like you said about him kind of longing for that type of carefree attitude.
Right.
In that episode, which first of all, I always forget how soon this happens. It's like the second episode.
Yeah.
In that episode, his main plot is with his dad. And his dad has left, abandoned them. And there is a sense throughout this series that Jonathan's lost his childhood.
Yeah.
He's had to work.
Absolutely.
Because Joyce isn't making enough money and stuff like that. So there's an element of that too. I mean, he is just very frustrated with his dad in this episode and what he has lost. So that really resonates with me. But I do think that some people are right to say we move past this pretty quick.
We did. Yeah. He like never sees that it was actually inappropriate.
Yeah.
Is the thing that's kind of
because the show because the supernatural element takes over. Yeah. If this was a regular high school drama, then we would have some work to do. But then their lives are in danger the next night from a mystery creature that lives in a tree. So
right, you know, priorities here.
And then his little brother's body is found in the quarry, and he's mourning the death of his little brother. And worse, his mom is not acknowledging this. Right. Joyce is talking about faceless monsters, and Will has been in the Christmas lights and. The funeral arrangements are not going well.
No.
And Jonathan and Joyce have this confrontation right in the middle
public,
of the street.
Yes, very public.
Mom, stop.
Just go home, Jonathan.
No, this is not an okay time for you to shut down.
Shut down?
No, we have to deal with this, Mom. We have to deal with the funeral.
The funeral? For who? For that thing back there?
Let me get this straight. Will. That's not his body because he's in the lights, right? And there's a monster in the wall. Do you even hear yourself?
I know it sounds crazy. I sound crazy. Yeah. You think I don't know that?
I feel like this is such a powerful scene. And I think it's like all meant to kind of highlight Joyce and her unfailing faith that Will is still alive. But I really feel like Jonathan's character truly captures realistically what everyone in this town is thinking. I mean, it's highlighting just how crazy Joyce's conclusion is that Will's body is a fake. But not only that, it further shows how alone Jonathan is. Like you were saying, that he's like the weight of the world is kind of on him. So he clearly doesn't have any friends. He's caught up in this responsibility of raising his brother while his single mom is struggling to make ends meet. Yeah. And now he's having to make funeral arrangements for his seemingly dead brother by himself.
And I'm really struck by you can't shut down again.
Oh, yeah.
Because presumably this has happened before, I'm guessing, when Lonnie left and Jonathan had to take up. And Joyce is like, shut down? What are you talking about? Which also says something as well
about
the relationship of Jonathan and his mom. But yeah, Jonathan is completely alone.
Uh-huh. And like totally beat down by these adult responsibilities as a teenager.
I know. And now he's literally, Lonnie only cares about the money. Joyce is literally saying he's not dead. But Jonathan does come to decide that Joyce is right, that something is going on here, simply by talking to Nancy and realizing there is a faceless monster. And I do like that because Jonathan, doesn't just stick to his guns and think my mom is crazy.
Right.
I really do sense, like I talked about in Hopper's episode, I do get the sense that Jonathan knows on some frequency that this is not exactly how Joyce would react if her youngest child would die.
Yeah.
I just think there's some frequency there, but he and Nancy don't tell her about that. They're going to take on their own plot. Which
let her just believe that nobody believes in her.
I love that he doesn't go home and say like, Mom, you were right.
Right.
They're going to go kill that monster.
Uh-huh.
And then they're in the hunt and they go out in the woods and Nancy goes into the tree, the upside down, Jonathan pulls her out and they're terrified and they're in room and Nancy asks her to stay in the room and they decide to try again later, which by the way, Joyce never wonders where Jonathan is during any of this either. So conversely, they're not talking.
I think that's like kind of a reflection of how she's kind of allowed the adult responsibilities to fall on him.
Yeah.
She hasn't worried about him because she knows that he's, capable as an adult, which is not like right to do. Right.
But she is hyper fixated on Will.
Yeah.
And I get the sense, though they've never explicitly said this, that Will and his, potential for being gay is part of what split Lonnie and Joyce in the first place. Their marriage.
And she does actually mention that.
That's the very first episode. Joyce is like, oh, he thinks he's, queer. And Hopper's like, is he? like, 83, baby. Weird and darker time. Steve and Nancy, before they can go out to try and fight and kill the monster again, they've bought all these weapons. They come upon the cinema, which is playing a movie starring Nancy the Slut Wheeler. And as they go to confront Steve and Tommy and Carol, Jonathan...
Carol's such a bitch.
Jonathan then beats the hell out of Steve. Now, okay, help me understand from this. He doesn't even seem to really like Nancy that much. How do we get from Nancy Slut Wheeler to Jonathan literally punching Steve almost to death in an alleyway?
I mean, okay, wouldn't you snap by this point? Because, like, think of what brings him to it. Steve is, like, saying the shittiest stuff about his family.
Oh, yeah.
That's when he snaps.
He does say the screw up like your father.
Uh-huh.
And then he also, Steve said, this is a dark one from Steve, I'm not even surprised what happened to your brother.
Yeah.
Like, damn, Steve.
Yeah. So, like, he has all these adult responsibilities. He's just lost his brother. Mm-hmm. And then Steve, like, goes on to say all of that stuff. I mean, who wouldn't snap? Like, seriously.
But isn't it's like, to me, on the rewatch, it's kind of jarring because, like, 100 people are going to die from the Upside Down, and one of them's not Will. So this isn't really that important. And, like,
they don't know that at this point.
They don't know. You're right. They don't know this at that time. That's me putting my projections onto it.
Come on.
But then also, like, you're a screw up like your father. That's where Jonathan really gets pissed. We never even see Jonathan's father ever again. I feel like it's supposed to be a much bigger part of his character, his hatred of his father. Like, I've actually read that it was supposed to be Lonnie who comes in and saves Jonathan and Nancy from the Demogorgon, not Steve.
Oh.
Yeah, but he just kind of gets written off there, and thankfully Steve is the one doing it. But
it was the right
I just
choice.
Feel like the Jonathan dad plot was supposed to be much bigger, and because it's completely abandoned, this scene
this
just feels
like
a little light to me.
To it?
I don't know. You're the emotional person. You seem to be okay with this. I think Jonathan snaps out of nowhere.
I don't know. I feel like it was accumulation of all the things that Steve was saying.
But what you don't say is it has anything to do with Nancy. Does it have anything really to do with Nancy? Because in the Nancy episode, we talked about them. She's like, we're supposed to be killing the Demogorgon. I don't know what the hell's going on with these two in an alleyway.
No, I think you're right. It doesn't, at this point, it doesn't really have anything to do with Nancy.
Isn't that funny?
That is fun. That is kind of funny.
So at jail, Jonathan's bailed out. They gather the gang together. I love Jonathan tells Hopper everything, which I absolutely love.
That's what's best about the show.
I know. They gather up the kids. They find there's a little superpower girl with her who's going to find Will and does through the salt tub a bath. And Joyce and Hopper leave. And then Jonathan agrees for a third time to go and kill the monster.
I love how we say agrees because it's like it's never his idea.
Yeah. It's really Nancy just saying we're going to do this.
Right.
And then they set the trap. They buy all that stuff. Steve shows up at an inopportune time. Kind of an opportune time because he sort of saves their butts.
Yeah.
And they beat the Demogorgon. The Demogorgon limps off to eventually be destroyed by Eleven against a chalkboard. And in the epilogue, we see that it's Nancy and Steve who are back together, though they do pitch some money together and get Jonathan a camera. So, you know, no hard feelings. But Jonathan does not get the girl. Were you surprised by that?
I had hoped that Jonathan would get the girl, that him and Nancy would end up together. But I mean, if you're a regular listener, you already knew that. We've gone over this in a few previous podcasts. I mean,
where does Jonathan even start liking Nancy?
Okay. I think he probably had like a little crush on her all along. Like he obviously knew her because Will was friends with her younger brother, but I think they were just kind of in completely different worlds.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until, you know, Stranger Things happened that kind of brought them together and allowed them to develop this sort of relationship, this friendship that obviously we know develops into a relationship.
Yeah, I feel like it is more, it's from like people, so Nancy literally says to Jonathan, you're just a miserable loner. And Jonathan says she's, you know, a typical rebel rich girl. I think it's a step from being kind of opposed to each other and sort of like disliking each other to friends rather than a step from that to a relationship. I think we actually see them build a friendship here, not a relationship. Really rewatching it, there's no like doe eyes moment, you know, where they're looking at each other and romantic music is playing.
I disagree a little bit. I don't think that there was really a dislike at any point, but I think like what I said, that Maybe there was an attraction to Nancy at some point, but it was very like separated because they didn't really know each other that much. Mm. There was no reason for them to get along because he's trying to be the man of the house and with his single mom, and he doesn't have time to even like think of girls too deeply. But then of course they become friends. But I think there's always this little bit of underlying attraction between them, like as their friendship develops.
Well, they do not let that blossom throughout the year between season one and season two, because, and like we'll talk about, Jonathan really goes into super older brother chaperone mode. You know?
Yeah, but there's definitely sexual tension there. I mean, we see that
between seasons?
No, well, seems like they didn't even when talk they come to each into other. Season two, remember there's that conversation where Nancy's trying to get him to go to the Halloween party and then Steve comes up and they kiss and Jonathan just like beelines out of there.
Okay, so something's been bubbling, simmering. Yeah, okay, you're good point. But his actions are with Will.
Absolutely.
And definitely he's literally Joyce has delegated some of her obsession over Will to Jonathan, whose job it is to follow her around.
Right.
He sits down with Will. He has that great conversation when he finds out that some of the kids are calling Will zombie boy.
Yeah.
And Will thinks he's a freak. And Jonathan says, "You are a freak, but that's good." That conversation.
Who would you rather be friends with? Bowie or Kenny Rogers?
Oh,
exactly. It's no contest. The thing is, nobody normal ever accomplished anything meaningful in this world. You got it?
Well, some people like Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers? I love Kenny Rogers.
Just wanted to get that little Bob moment there, too.
I love it. We love Bob Newby. I just love this. It's such a sweet moment between Will and Jonathan when Will is like, you know, everybody's been coddling him, and he's right to be upset about that. Jonathan's reaction to this is so perfect as a big brother. He like actually considers what Will is saying. He realizes that maybe he does need to let Will be just a kid and move forward. But not only that, he's like assuring Will that it's okay to be a freak.
Yeah.
Good even to be different.
He's a great older brother.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people listening right now are probably saying, but then it just goes away. Like, this is the last time that him and Will talk seriously until the season four finale.
No.
This season two premiere through the season four finale, they're kind of separated. But also, that absence, that natural growing apart that they do, makes that scene that we will definitely be talking about at the end of season four at the pizza place, it's so much more powerful because of the absence in between. So quit whining. Quit whining out there. Not everybody has to talk every single episode. Sometimes the time can do good. But I think and the point, too, is that this is like one of his main focuses. Money and being supportive to Will.
Yeah.
He's paused his own life.
Yeah.
This is kind of the theme that comes up for season two. You talked about him taking pictures of what he's lost. But he's also about to be, or was, you got to go to this party. You got to go to this party, right?
Right, like, yeah.
Parties are not part of Jonathan's life. He's he's on point. He's absolutely stuck in a carousel of caring for Will at Jonathan's expense. But when he's on Will duty for Halloween, taking him trick-or-treating, he allows Will to trick-or-treat himself with his friends, and Jonathan goes to that high school party. His party costume is Guy Who Hates Parties. He observes the end of Nancy and Steve's bullshit fight, and he's the one who takes Nancy home. They confide in each other. The next morning, they confide in each other that both of them have not been able to move on, and they make a plan to hurt the lab. Now,
hell yeah!
And it's interesting to me because that's against Hopper. That's against Joyce. They've made this agreement with the lab. So we know Nancy is determined to avenge Barb and therefore doesn't care about what Hopper and Joyce have set up. What drives Jonathan to want to break this agreement and go against Hopper and Joyce and the kids and Steve and everybody with Nancy?
I mean, come on.
Yeah?
You know the answer to this.
What's the answer?
It's Nancy. I mean, come on. I think this is kind of where we first start to see that Jonathan is a little bit spineless. He is definitely not like the take charge kind of person, but Nancy is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take like a lot for her to talk him into it, because first off, there's like that little bit of attraction, but also like he's kind of a pushover.
Yeah. He's kind of doing it for Barb. Why? Because Nancy's doing it for Barb.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, he's mad at them for Will, but he's also like not stewing in it.
Yeah. He never would have like come up with this or done this on his own.
I think you're right. I mean, I thought I had like tried to figure out like maybe there's a little bit of rebellion against Joyce who's been making him.
No.
I think he's just going along with Nancy, which he does for a while here.
Yeah.
And it continues to do so, actually.
It's like the theme through season 2 and 3.
But hey, they set up a fun, you know, spy thriller. They get themselves captured in the park by
really
the lab.
Like
they bring in the cassette and they record Dr. Owens, you know, incriminating himself. They take that to Murray in Illinois and they come up with the watered down plan, which in the Nancy episode we talked about, Jonathan is a step behind.
Behind
Murray and
from
Nancy.
The beginning, yeah.
And Murray takes his vodka upstairs and Jonathan and Nancy seal the deal. They sleep together after much hand-wringing and back and forth, little Indiana Jones, will they, won't they, bedroom dance. But is this really a healthy way to start a relationship?
Okay. I think it's kind of like the natural conclusion to everything that they've been going through together. Like they've had their shared trauma, which brought them into like this close friendship.
Which Murray calls out specifically.
Of course, yeah. And that's, but like, I feel like, I know you don't 100% agree, but I think that was always weighted with a little bit of romantic tension that we see grow throughout season 2. And then Murray just kind of gave it the push for them to finally confront their feelings. Jonathan was never going to like step up and say anything again. He's a pushover. Maybe Nancy would have eventually, but she didn't have to because Murray kind of, you know, gave them that push.
Yeah. It almost is an excuse, basically. Like shared trauma was an excuse.
Well,
I think it's true. I mean, it's like completely true.
Which part?
That the only reason they are together is shared trauma.
I think that that is ultimately what brings them together, but whether that means that it's unhealthy, I don't think that that's always unhealthy. Like, I think it's possible to get a really healthy relationship out of, like, going through huge trials with another person.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess, everyone's not the same. What happens from there is different for everybody.
Right.
So they go, they've done it. They've sent off the tapes to various newspaper organizations. They go back to Hawkins. They learn about basically everything. They learn that Will is flayed. They had no idea. They learn that Bob is dead. They had no idea. And they come up with a plan. And Will is going to tap out in Morse code, close gate, and 11 saves them all. And, you know, the whole ending of season 2.
You know. Just some stuff happens in between.
Yeah. And as Hopper and 11 go to close the gate, Joyce says, well, we got to get the thing out of my son. We got to roast my son, Will Byers. And Jonathan is absolutely the least on board with that plan of just putting all that heat, literal heat on Will.
Well, he's super protective of Will. I mean, we see that from the very beginning.
But Joyce and Nancy are pushing it, literally hitting him with a fire poker.
Yeah. Oh, I know, Nancy. It was like a nice move on her part.
Yeah.
But again, it's like the spineless. He's super protective of his brother, but he's also like he can't stand the idea of hurting him in any way. And Joyce understands that I will do anything to save him, even if that means hurting him.
Yeah. You know, you just forget. What is he? A junior in high school at this point?
Yeah, you do forget. Maybe he is just a kid. Yeah.
Like, spineless, you know, that could sound like an insult.
It's a bit harsh.
But, you know, it's sort of sad. When he was Will's age, he was basically having to make money going through. I mean, there is something lost in Jonathan. I really enjoyed doing this episode because, like, focusing just on Jonathan is kind of, you know, unique.
Yeah.
And then he radios to Hopper and he says, we did it, which always pet peeve of mine. You do shit, Jonathan. No. We did it. Close the gate. And they do.
And that brings us to season 3.
Season 3, where Jonathan and Nancy have been together that junior year of high school and into the summer.
Not some shining moments from Jonathan in this season.
No, not shining. it kind of continues to be Nancy's, you know, secondary, exactly. secondary character. They are both interns at the Hawkins Post, uh-huh. and she is absolutely determined to follow this lead that she's got. She's having a bad time at work.
Right.
Jonathan gets to be in a room, you know, developing, but Nancy's not having a good interpersonal time.
No, she's like the secretary.
She's determined to follow this lead on rats and fertilizer. Jonathan takes a picture of the rat, but narrowly misses seeing the rat explode.
Of course he does.
Eventually, all of this leads to both of them getting fired because they multiple times go out to Mrs. Driscoll's house, represent themselves as reporters, and as they drive back after being fired, they have what is presumably one of their first fights since season one.
Right.
What's that supposed to mean?
I told you over and over to drop this story, that it was a bad idea, but you refused, and now I'm screwed.
It's a summer job. Your life is hardly over.
I don't live in a two-story house on Maple Street. My dad doesn't earn six figures. Hell, he isn't even around.
God, here comes the Oliver Twist routine.
Mortgage, college tuition. You know, they're real things, Nancy. Things that you don't care about only because you don't have to.
I didn't realize I lived in a bubble. You do.
It's actually a three-story house if you include the basement, yeah, but Jonathan. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Mike's downstairs, kitchen's middle stairs, bedrooms are upstairs. Yeah. You, Jonathan, you don't know nothing.
Well, I don't know. I have to start with Jonathan definitely has some great points here. So for him, like, this job was financially important to help him with bills that he obviously helps his mom pay for. Mm-hmm. And college, he has to think about that. Things that Nancy's middle class life doesn't ever have to really worry about.
Yeah, upper middle class if her dad's making six uh-huh. figures in 1985.
Yeah. So I definitely feel like some of his anger here is justified. A lot of his anger here is justified.
Yeah.
However, he completely disregards Nancy's perspective as a woman in the workplace in the 80s. She is like so disrespected, disregarded by these misogynistic men, and basically has to fight tooth and nail for every ounce of respect that she can get. And Jonathan, you know, white male privilege, fails to see how difficult this could be for her. And his, you know, he's got that timid personality, that contentment with working behind the curtains, which he basically does. He's mm-hmm. back, you know, developing film. It allows him to be ignorant of what she's going through. Yeah. It's just such a failing on his part. He's such a like a pushover that he won't like even see that and stick up for her.
Yeah. Well, they both have their respective bubbles in this case, and Jonathan's is definitely worse. He says that's the real world, and Nancy's point is I don't think that
it shouldn't be the real world.
And I mean, that behavior that they give to her is supremely unprofessional. That should never be described as the real world.
No.
Even in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And later he says he's completely, utterly, totally wrong. You know, I don't know. I think he does kind of give up on his point a little bit. It was the wrong time to bring up his point compared to what Nancy was going through. But his sub point, which maybe should be separated, is that money is a huge deal to him.
Yes.
And maybe he could bring that up in a different context.
Right.
But, you know, the whole series, I mean, Will goes missing because Jonathan's taking a second shift.
Right.
And he's not home.
Exactly.
The buyers are supremely poor. College is not cheap. I mean, it was way cheaper in 1985 than it is now. But, you know, it was just so much. It's so much worse for Jonathan to not have a job. And Nancy is also not listening to him at all, which, sure, Nancy is definitely right in terms of which one is worse. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason Jonathan blows up is Nancy is completely unaware that he is fuming at that steering wheel.
Yeah.
She's like talking and talking. He's like fuming. And then she's like, oh, you think this is funny? What are you laughing for? Nancy, he's pissed.
Yeah.
You haven't even noticed.
He lost like important revenue.
And then she also says, oh, you're saying I live in a bubble? As if she doesn't live in a bubble.
Yeah, she absolutely does.
She absolutely does. So yeah, he drops that point, but it's still there.
Yeah.
But I think we finally found the best way to say this. We always struggle with this subject. There's definitely Nancy is right in the conversation. Not Jonathan's thing is like completely irrelevant to Nancy's unprofessional, you know, treatment.
Right.
But his thing is still real. Just should be in a different context, not as a versus.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So they say Nancy ends that conversation with, I guess we don't understand each other. And that separation.
And in that moment, she's right. They are both right. They're not understanding each other in that moment. No.
And that separation lasts one night, which is the sauna test. As they Nancy realizes that Mrs. Driscoll turns black with the veins, she realizes the upside down is back. And she calls Jonathan the next morning. And what's funny is I didn't notice this, but she gets that phone call, or Jonathan gets that phone call. And from Jonathan's perspective, it's about to be Save Will Part 3. Have you noticed? Like, she says, "Where's Will?" And he goes, "What do you mean? What do you mean, where's Will?"
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I know what you're laughing about, because in that conversation, he also says, "I was out with Fagin in the gang." Wait a minute. Jonathan has friends?
I know. Like, this is the first mention of him having friends at all. I would like to point out, we've still never met these said friends.
I mean, they can't be good friends.
No. And are they actually real? Maybe he was drinking by himself. I mean, who knows?
There's a conspiracy. But, like,
we have not seen a single friend of Jonathan's.
I mean, he's got to be the worst friend of all time. He shows up to hang like once a year. I mean, he's the weirdo loner in high school. That guy doesn't have friends. And then he's with Nancy. You know he's not taking weekends off from Nancy. Nancy
is a catch.
I love you, girl, but you are not a relaxed hang.
Oh, no.
He's going to do what Nancy says they're going to do. So they gather up the kids in the station wagon. They're back at it. They're battling the upside down. At the hospital, they fight their former co-workers who have been flayed. Right. And they see the mini meat flare, and they battle that with 11. And then they travel to the cabin, and Jonathan gets the axe, but loses the axe, and Lucas does the axing.
He's never been that great at axing.
Yeah. Jonathan doesn't get to do the Demogorgon in season one. Steve does. No. Doesn't get to do the axing in season three. Lucas does. And then when they're at the mall, Jonathan has the idea to go get the knife to get the thing out of Eleven's leg.
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't do that either, right?
Does actually cut into it, but he's not successful.
Ultimately, Eleven's the one who gets that thing out. Poor Jonathan. But that's really it for season three. I mean, Jonathan barely does anything in season three. I feel like, has any character done less in a season than Jonathan in season three?
You know, I think it's okay that he doesn't, because we have so many powerhouse characters at this point. Like, at least one of them has to be like semi-useless,
yeah.
You know? And honestly, like, he really isn't entirely useless. Like,
right.
His part in Stranger Things allows further dynamic to be explored with other characters like Nancy and Will. Yeah. And I feel like by season three, Jonathan is like, he's kind of become this strong ancillary character rather than like one of the main gang.
Yeah. He drops off the screen time calculations after season one.
Okay. Like, yeah. How much screen time in season one compared to the rest?
Well, welcome to Screen Time Data Minute per at Data Screen.
All right, let's hear it.
So Jonathan, has the 11th most screen time in the series. So he's the 11th character with screen time.
And we did 11. We're doing 11 characters.
So he's the least of the characters that we're doing. After season one, he was right up there with the top. So 11 and Mike were the two top screen timers of season one. And then it was Joyce, Nancy, Jonathan, and Hopper, all between 80 to 85 minutes. He was ahead of Dustin. He was ahead of Lucas. He was way ahead of Steve.
Yeah.
Max didn't even exist yet.
Right.
And yet, through seasons 2, 3, and 4, because I'm including 4 in this, Jonathan has been long passed up in screen time by Dustin, Lucas, and Steve. Even Max, who wasn't in season one at all, even Will, who was barely in season one, have passed him up. Jonathan has 4 hours and 45 minutes of screen time.
Overall, like throughout.
Overall, throughout seasons 1 through 4. 11 has 8 hours and 7 minutes.
Oh my gosh. This is literally half of 11's screen time.
Nancy is 6 hours, 21. Hopper, 6 hours, 18. Mike, 6 hours, 15. Dustin, 5 hours, 56.
Wow.
So they're all like more than an hour ahead. More than an hour ahead of Jonathan. And the most damning thing is that Max, 5 hours, 15 minutes. Will, 4 hours, 51 minutes. Steve, 4 hours, 56 minutes. Catch up to him after his big lead in season one.
Wow. Dang. Like, that just shows perspective right there.
I know that was a lot of math and numbers, everybody, but you can check it out at data_screen on Twitter, and you can actually watch it all go. So
that is really cool. Like, yeah. I like that because, like you said, he is one of the main characters in season one, and then he totally drops off.
Yeah. It's pretty cool to watch. Check it out. So season three ends with Jonathan. He helps throw fireworks at the meat flare. His mom turns the key and kills Hopper.
It does do a little. You know?
Yeah, it does do a little bit. But ultimately, Joyce says, we're out of here. We're moving to California. Jonathan does go with them for his senior year.
And then things don't look good for him starting in season four either because, like, again, low screen time and he's getting high.
Exactly. Jonathan in season four can be described as low screen time and getting high. Great job, Kathleen. And he's got a new friend at least.
Yeah.
Argyle.
A real friend. See him on
Jonathan
screen.
Jonathan and Argyle is absolutely awesome.
He's so awesome.
And although Jonathan's got this whole speech praising Nancy relentlessly, right, he doesn't want to see her on spring break, and he hasn't yet told her that he's not going to college with her. He's not going to Emerson. He's going to go to community college to stay near Will and Joyce. And Argyle, is, like you said, to your point, good friend, calls him out on it. What was I supposed to do? Jonathan says. Argyle, not lie. Why does Jonathan lie? Why is he dragging his feet on this?
He's spineless. I mean, it's just like a part of his character. And yeah. I've been using a lot of harsh words. I think you encapsulated it very well, though. Like, his life has been very hard from a young age. It makes sense that he's like this. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, he is kind of a pushover. He's spineless. He doesn't want to, like, confront his problems. Argyle is so right to call him out, though. Like, that is, he shouldn't lie. He should have just told Nancy what was going on. But I don't know. I do think it really fits his character development, how he would naturally react, right? And it also allows this proper tension and kind of breakaway between him and Nancy so we can see Nancy stand out more on her own, mm-hmm, and kind of highlight her own personal strength, yeah, like separate from Steve, separate from Jonathan.
Yeah, except for the car fight, Jonathan is always there to support Nancy. Yeah. Relentless support. But like you said, Nancy, that's not what she needs.
No.
It's interesting. Fred the little weirdo.
Right.
He is Mr. Pushback to Nancy. He's a sassy bitch about the whole Jonathan thing. You know, oh, really? Well, just call it investigative instincts. You know, he's always pushing back on her. And I find interesting that Nancy gravitates to that. She needs to be sharpened. Nancy is Michael Jordan. She's going to win. She's going to win you championships, but it's not going to be pleasant. You got to break a few eggs to be great sometimes. And Jonathan's just not that guy. Not that guy.
No.
But another underlying reason is his dad. Yeah. I was struck rewatching by him and Argyle talking. Why you lie, not lie. Jonathan literally says there's going to be a huge knot of resentment, and then we'll be like my mom and my dad, and I'll leave her and I won't see the kids. Like, clearly that's what he thinks what happens to relationships, right, if you're not honest with each other.
That was his life. That was his experience.
His just fear of being his dad is so strong when we do an episode like this, but it's not that apparent watching it as a whole.
I have to say, your insight into Jonathan as a, I'm usually the emotionally connected one, but you're kind of crushing Jonathan.
You know what? Maybe I'm a little more like Jonathan than we want to let on. So anyway, they pick up the kids from Rinkomania after Eleven has committed a skate attack. Eleven's arrested, and Jonathan and Mike and Will are all put under house arrest. That whole thing. They escape, thankfully, with Argyle in the pizza truck as the government comes and machine guns down the house. The unknown super agent man, Jonathan's kind of here. He's kind of snapping out of it, right? He's like, okay, I've been high. It's nice to see Jonathan get some comic relief.
Yep, yep.
In early in the season, blip, blip, blip. And the, wait, who's going to Alaska?
Yeah.
But in the middle of the season, he absolutely snaps out of it. And he's pissed at Argyle. Come on, man. We got to fight the upside down now.
Right. You know, I think that it comes back to his protectiveness of his brother, Will, I think. Yeah. We always see the most strength from Jonathan whenever Will is in any kind of trouble. And So I think that's where that comes from.
So they drive to Utah, right? Where Susie live?
Oh, I think so.
Oh, they drive to Utah to locate Nina. Then they drive to Nevada. There's a lot of driving here. Argyle says his butt is tired. But they save 11, quote unquote, after 11 has destroyed the whole military. They provide a ride for 11, right. Let's face it. Unable to get back to Hawkins, they say, well, there's one thing we can do. We can do a piggyback from a surfer boy pizza dough freezer. And in that moment, as they stir the salt into that pizza dough freezer, Jonathan will finally reconnect with a heart-to-heart. And this is a beautiful scene.
I don't want you to forget that I'm here. And I'll always be here. No matter what. Because you're my brother. And I love you. And there is nothing in this world, okay? Absolutely nothing that will ever change that. You got that?
Yeah. And I'm always here for you too.
I know.
God, such a powerful scene. And now we're back to big, like pro big brother status here. But really quick, I just want to point out that the Duffer brothers, like, I like that they kind of call out Jonathan's character flaw in this scene. You didn't play it here, but Jonathan says, like, that was just me dealing with my own shit, hiding from my own problems. Mm. And like, that's what's been happening in season 2 and 3. And it has been forever since they've had a heart-to-heart, like you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, like it's 24 episodes from the season 2 premiere to the season 4 finale. When they, like, since they had the zombie boy talk and Bob walks by and says he loves Kenny Rogers. And you know what's interesting? That season 2 premiere scene where he talks about zombie boy, what Jonathan says is, did someone call you that? Hey, you can talk to me. It's the same exact core message that he gives here to Will as he starts to talk about Larry the Lego guy. He stuck up his nose and leads into the same basic message. You can talk to me.
Yeah. He does an excellent job of telling Will, like, that it's safe to confide in him, just kind of in that scene. He makes him comfortable, lets him know that it's okay to trust Jonathan. Jonathan will always be there to love and support him without judgment. Yeah. And this is the Jonathan that we all love. And I'm glad to see him back.
Yeah. And this scene, watching it from Jonathan's perspective, was kind of the first time that I had really thought about why he does this. He is absolutely taking a huge step in his life. He's not getting stoned anymore. He's going to move forward. He didn't want to move forward. Because, honestly, when you watch this scene, it's all about Will, right?
Right. It's totally about Will.
The face that Will is making, the actor does some great... When Jonathan says this and we're zooming in on Will's face, it's so powerful. And so powerful. Awesome as Will realizes truly what Jonathan is saying. Like, hey, if you want to say you're gay... I will still be there.
Right.
Like, that is awesome. And that's the main thing. But watching from Jonathan's perspective, it's kind of interesting. I guess here's a side question. Right before this, Will and Mike have that conversation in the car.
Right.
And Jonathan looks at them in the mirror and looks back. Uh-huh. Some people say, like, that's when Jonathan realizes Will was gay. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I think Jonathan really knows his brother. I think that he easily could have like suspected this beforehand, but I think maybe this is when he starts to realize, like, I've been so high, I haven't been there for my brother, and like he's going through this huge struggle and I haven't been there to help him.
Yes. That I say absolutely. Jonathan has always known that Will was gay.
Yeah.
Joyce and Lonnie know it. Jonathan knows it. It's a whole friction point for their family. I mean, we hear it all the time in season 1. We hear Joyce say it. We hear the bully Troy say it to the kids. Like, you know, my dad says, you know, Will is gay because that's what Lonnie says. You know, like, Jonathan's look in the mirror of pain is, I haven't been doing this.
Yeah.
My little brother's in high school and I always knew that this was what I was supposed to protect, and I'm not protecting it. So I think it's a huge deal for Jonathan in this scene as well. And you totally nailed it there. He realizes he hasn't been protecting him.
And he's back. He's back at this point.
Older brother. So the piggyback works. They make the 2-day drive back to Hawkins. Jonathan and Nancy finally reunite there. They had that awkward conversation where they confirm to each other that they are okay. Uh-huh. Where they're both clearly lying to each other. I mean, you agree. They're not going to be okay for season 5,
no,
right?
No, we've talked about this so many different times in our podcast. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be the natural kind of end to their relationship where they start to drift apart.
Yeah, I mean... Not to go back to the Michael Jordan thing, but Nancy needs to be sharpened. Nancy needs people to push her. Murray pushes her in season 2. You know, the paper guys and her mom push her in season 3. Vecna is the one who pushes her in season 4. Jonathan never pushes her. She needs something better. And he needs to say that. He's just avoided saying, like, this is not my jam. Okay. Nancy is not good to him. Nancy's not good to him. Season 3 is hard to watch sometimes because of how much she's pushing him around. Specifically in the basement when he's trying to take the pictures of that rat.
Right.
And she's got the phone number, so she's like, we have to go now. And Jonathan's like, can I finish taking a picture? Something's happening with this rat. And she's like, shut the F up and get upstairs. I'm now going.
Like, a different perspective, because like we look at Jonathan from like a weakness sort of point, but like they're not really compatible.
Like, and when you're watching it on a non-Jonathan focused perspective, you're like with Nancy. And I'm definitely using it with Nancy. Like, come on, Jonathan, get going. Nancy's on the case. Right. But when you think about it from Jonathan's perspective, it is very different. Very different. All right. So we think,
I love that point. I'm sorry. Let's go back to that. Like,
the
I
rat
just,
thing?
Yeah. No, I just like that perspective that you have. Like, you're 100% on the ball. They really just aren't compatible.
Yeah.
That really made it just kind of drive home in my brain. So
doing this episode, we've always been, we're not even Team Steve. We're Team Nancy, just not ending up either of them. That's this podcast's official policy. But doing this episode made me absolutely certain that Jonathan and Nancy should not and will not be together.
Yeah, and I want to see Jonathan back to what he was in season 1. So
supporting Will.
Yeah, I want to see. Yeah. I think that's where he's best.
He's got some unresolved stuff with Joyce too. I'd be interested to see be tackled there. All right. Well, that's the episode. We'll be back next with Mike.
Heyo.
My name is Miles.
I'm Kathleen.
A good night.